I'm making progress in these notes, not as fast as I intended to, but it's always like that. Yeah. Well, there are many little things in this theory that are worth to know, and maybe if I go too fast, I won't have the time to mention them. And they are important to understand what's going on. So let me mention a few of them, which I skipped. Yes, one of them is about the groupoid generated by one isomorphism. So we have I, which is delta 1, and J, which is delta prime 1, which is the groupoid generated by one isomorphism. I recall that I had used this notation delta prime n for the nerve or the groupoid generated, let's say, is essentially the nerve of pi 1 of the category n, which is just so this is just a special case of this notation. So let me discuss a little bit about the nature of this object. If you look at a simplex in J, well, J can also be described as the co-skeleton, is also the co-skeleton zero of delta 1. So maybe I should recall you that we have the skeleton and co-skeleton functors in S. They are both, let's say, endofunctors, skeleton N and co-skeleton N. I draw them like that because skeleton N is the left adjoint to the co-skeleton N. You may describe skeleton N of X as the simplicial subset of X generated by the simplices of dimension less or equal to N. So this is the simplicial. Well, I call that a simplicial subset rather than a sub-simplicial set. The simplicial subset. Set of X generated by simplices of dimension less than n. That's one way of describing the skeleton of X. There are other ways. And the co-skeleton is the right adjoint. So I'm just saying, observing that J is actually the coskeleton zero of delta one, which is also the coskeleton zero of 2 points. Of the simplest set with exactly 2 points. So, this is some kind of trivial observation, but it's useful for understanding the simplices of J, because that means that if you want to understand what is the simplex of J, it's really just a map from the skeleton zero of n to 0, 1, which is the same thing as a map from 0, 1, n to 0, 1. In other words, a simplex of J is just a map from 0, n to 0, 1. That's easy to understand. It means that a functor, in other words, a functor from the category delta n to j is nothing but is completely determined by its value on the objects, because since there is exactly one isomorphism between 0 and 1, you just need to know the functor. If you think of this as a functor, because this is the same thing as n, it's completely determined by the value of the functor on the objects. There is only one way to extend a map like this to a functor. Now, if we want to understand a simplicial set, we need to understand the non-degenerated simplices. So what are the non-degenerated simplices of J? That's easy to check, that a map F to 0, 1 represents a non-degenerated simplex of J if and only if f of I is different from f of I plus 1 for every I. In other words, it's a map alternating from 0 and 1. So that means that there are exactly two non-degenerated simplices in dimension n. So the non-degenerated simplices, if I list the value of f, so there are two cases. F is 0, 1, 0, 1, etc., starting with 0, or a simplex starting with 1, 0. Right. There are exactly two non-degenerated simplices in dimension n. Now, when you see that, you begin to realize that this thing is actually, that J is really the infinite dimensional sphere. I mean, the two non-degenerated simplices are the upper and lower cap. In other words, the if you take the skeleton N of J, that's the N sphere. So let's just look at the case n equal, the case n equal to 1 is clear. There are two isomorphisms. You have one isomorphism from 0 to 1, let's say f, and the other, I call it f, maybe I should call it u and v, and that's the circle, right? That's the one nerve, the one skeleton of J is a circle. So S1 is the one skeleton of J, right? This is clear. Now, if you add the relation, if you had two simplices saying that UV, now you're going to glue something to this circle, one simplex like this, so you take this triangle and you just glue, I'm sorry, that should go from 0 to 0. So you see it here, U and V, you glue it. You get, let's say, the upper hemisphere. And then, so that's U and V, and then you have V and U. One, one, zero, okay? And now you're going to glue this other triangle the other way, and that's going to make the lower hemisphere of the two sphere. So the second skeleton of J is S2, okay? And so J itself is the union of all these spheres. So S0, which is two points, and S1, S2, etc. And so J is the infinite dimensional sphere. Now, it's a classical result in topology that the infinite dimensional sphere is contractible, right? Okay. So Sn is not contractible, but J is contractible. Another way of looking at J is this. You have the symmetry of J. There is this functor that takes 0 to 1 and 1 to 0, right? Just the natural symmetry of this groupoid with two objects. And from a topological viewpoint, that's the antipode of the infinite dimensional sphere. You check this, that's exactly the antipode. This thing is actually the total space of the universal KZ2 bundle. So if you divide out, you get KZ21 bundle. So S infinity divided by the actions of tau is this Allenberg-MacLane space. So it's a classical construction. This object has been constructed many times by topologists, even simplicially, right? Now, we may think of the n-sphere as an approximation for J. If you have two objects in a semiset set which are connected by two arrows like that, it's not enough to ensure that these two objects are sort of quasi-isomorphic. If you want them to be quasi-isomorphic, you need to produce triangles like this. Right. What I was going to say about this. Right. Okay, let me make a statement that maybe will be clear. Okay, the theorem is this. that suppose let F be an arrow quasi as a morphism. In the quasi category X. Of course, here I'm using Yoneda, right? I'm seeing an arrow in the symbiosis set X as a map from the interval to X by Yoneda. That makes sense, right? And then there exists a map F prime from J to X, which extends F. In other words, that's another, it's a result which is saying that the notions of quasi-isomorphism that we have defined, I mean, recall that an arrow in a quasi-category was called a quasi-isomorphism if the arrow was invertible in the homotopy category. It's a very weak condition because you just need it to be invertible in the homotopy category. Now, there was an other alternative for the definitions of quasi-isomorphism. We could define a quasi-isomorphism to be a map from J. It is somehow much stronger. In which sense is this stronger? Well, we may think of a map F prime as providing F prime from J to X will define an infinite sequence of maps, I mean, from the sphere. So F prime, right, is an infinite sequence like that. And let's just try to see a little bit what it means. On this one, the meaning of F prime is clear. It is just a pair of arrows in the opposite direction. On S2, it's a bit stronger. Not only that you have a pair of arrows in opposite direction, but you have also two cells somehow, that you have U and V, let's say from A to B. And in addition to that, you may sort of imagine, if you like, that there is an isomorphism from VU, a sort of two cell from VU, the composite of VU, to the identity of A, and a two cell in the, okay? So this data describing a two cell from the composite of VU to the identity of A, etc., this data is essentially the same thing as these two triangles. That's the first step here. It's not enough. I mean, in the sense that to describe F prime, you have to keep on. In other words, in addition to these two cells, you may also have three cells. Where are they coming from? Well, if you think in terms of higher category theory, you need to compose I have not done this computation this morning, but right. Well, let's just say that F prime over Sn is describing higher coherence condition. On a quasi-automorphism. Right. These higher coherence conditions were considered by topologists for homotopy equivalences. Vaught, for example, has described a theory of you have two spaces and you want to describe a coherent equivalence between the two spaces. And I believe that what he was describing is really equivalent to that. If you take the nerve, the coherent nerve of the category of topological spaces. Okay, that's one thing about J. Another thing, okay, how is this theorem proof? Okay, the proof is deceptively simple. Okay, let me prove that. If you have a quasi-isomorphism proof, I'm going to use other things to prove it. Okay, proof. F factors through the inclusion. Which I call it JX, which is the largest Kahn complex contained in X. So you have to know that there is such a thing. Because F being a quasi-isomorphism implies, by constructions of JX, that the map which is here will factor through the JX, which is the largest Kahn complex contained in X. And then you have the following situation. You have JX, and you have I, and you have J. And there is an inclusion here. Right? Now, that's a cofabration, but it's also a weak homotopy equivalence. And classically, there is no difference. It's not a weak categorical equivalence, this inclusion, because this category is not equivalent to this category. But it's a weak homotopy equivalence, and it's a cofabration. Therefore, you can extend. Okay? And that's it. So that's one proof of a version of a theorem of Vaught. But really, you need to be able to select this Kahn complex JX to do that. Another good thing about J is that you can use it to describe the quasi-fabration. So, a theorem. suppose that I consider the inclusion of 0, let's call it J0, the inclusion into J. Then Quasi-fibration are certainly maps having the lifting property with respect to J0. But you would like to say that somehow that's exactly what they are. Remember that there was two conditions for a map between quasi-categories to be a quasi-fibration. One condition was that it has to be a mid-fibration, and the other condition that it has a lifting property with respect to J. Now suppose that then a map F in Q-cat is a quasi-fibration. If and only if the map I0 F J0 F is a trivial fibration. I should describe what is G0F. It's introducing a notation which is very useful. So, in general, if you have two maps, this is a standard construction in homotopy theory, since Quillen at least. If you have two maps U and F, you can describe a square, XB, YB, XA, YA. You get a square like this by composing, by using U and F, and then you get a map from XB to YB cross YA XA, and this is the map which I denote UF. Okay, that's it. I'm just giving a notation to a very classical construction of homotopy theory. So it's enough that according to this theorem that this map should be a trivial fibration for a map F to be a quasi-fibration. You don't even have to mention the fact that it should, yes? The trivial fibrations coincide between the classical model structure and the quasi-category model structure. So, maybe since I'm introducing this notation, I should maybe introduce a bit more of this kind of notation because it's very useful. Can also, given two maps U and V from S to T, you can do the triangle A cross S, A cross T, not the triangle but the square, B cross S, B cross T. You get a square and you take the push out and you get a map from the push out of A cross T over A cross S, B cross S to B cross T. And I like to denote this u cross prime v. That's a very simple notation, okay? U cross prime. Because it's built up from the Cartesian product. One could do the same thing with the tensor product. Then you put just tensor prime, okay? And the nice thing about this operation is that they are operations on maps, and cross prime is a tensor product, right? This is a tensor product on maps. And this map here is the right adjoint. In other words, in the category of maps, there is a bijection between, in the category of maps, there is a bijection between the maps like this and let's say the maps like this. Okay? This is the Hom functor for monoidal structure on the category of maps. Okay. And another very useful thing which I'm using all the time, it's the fact that there is an equivalence between the following three statements. So I'm going to use this notation here to say that a map has a left lifting property with respect to another map. Let's say U F means that U has the left lifting property with respect to F. This is a very useful notation. You may use your notation if you like, right? There's nothing special about this note. It's just because we need a notation. I'm sort of surprised that in MotoP theory, people don't give a notation for this correlation. It's always left, etc. And it makes things a bit heavy, right? It's good to have a notation when you use something often. So this thing is used very often, so it's good to have a notation. So I'm using, this is a pitchfork, yeah? Okay, and you have that, right? This is the fundamental relation which essentially was in Quillen, that the following things are equivalent to say that, right? If and only if U VF, if and only if V U UF, right? So you have, this is extremely useful. All my work is based on that. I'm using that all the time. I'm just exploiting this thing as much as I can. Okay, now let's move on. Equivalence with simplicial categories. I began to tell you a few things about that. We had the resolution of a category. So, simplicial resolution. So we have set the forgetful functor and the free functor from graph. Reflexive graph, the category of reflexive graph, and that's I'm sorry, this is cat. Sorry, cat. Okay, and we get a monad, a C, a comonad, I'm sorry, C, on cat, which is FU, and from which this is a comonad, from which we can resolve any category, will have a resolution, a free resolution. There is an augmentation and C square of A, etc., etc. Two arrows. So free resolution. And from which you can define a simple object, right? C star A, which is a simple category. So C star CNA is actually CN plus 1 to the A for N. Okay. And you have this functor C star from cat to simple cell objects in cat. And it's the object, this simple cell object has constant object of object. As a simple cell object, it is constant at the object level. And because of that, you're able to see it as something that goes into F-cat. Okay? Because object of CN, of CA, is object of A. Right? So that's the reason for this change of the target of C star. Okay, now you restrict C star to delta. C star is defined on every category, on all of cat. But you restrict it to delta, and you get something in F-cat. And then you take its left-hand extension to simply say set. Okay? So the left-hand extension, I'm going to denote it like this. C lower shriek. Left-hand extension. It's really the co-continuous extension of of this functor, because we know that this category is actually a sort of co-completions of delta. It's obtained by adding co-limits to delta freely. So a functor like this can be extended as a co-continuous functor. And this functor has a right adjoint, which is C upper shriek. And C upper shriek is the coherent nerve. As right adjoint, I'm sorry, is the coherent nerve. So C upper shriek of a simple cell category is a simple cell set, and its value at n is the F-cat of C n x. So that's the definition of the coherent nerve of a simple cell category. The coherent nerve of a simple cell category is a simple cell set.
Okay.
I'm sorry? It is, yeah, right. Well, okay, a little bit of notation about that, because it's good to have good notation. I don't mean... good notation and general notation. Well, I'm very, very careful about notation. Notation is very, very difficult. I mean, it's very, very difficult to find a good notation. It can take me years before settling to a notation. so let me tell you my notation. You may use your notation if you like, but my notation for this kind of situation, if you have a category, let's say E, and here, suppose that you have a small category C, and you have a functor, let's call it K, from C, a small category. And here, E is a big category. Then you take pre-sheaves on C. This is sometimes called C hat, right? Grothendieck likes to use this notation C hat. Because it's a co-completion. Assuming that E is co-complete, it will give rise to a pair of adjoint functor, K lower shriek and K upper shriek. And K upper shriek is what you would call the singular functors, and I agree with this terminology, I like it. So K upper shriek evaluated at A is simply E of key KA a fix, right? That's the singular functor, and it's left adjoint, which is K lower shriek. It's just a notation. So let's come back to this situation. First remark, C lower shriek is defined on the category of synthesized sets, and it should be compared with C lower star, which is defined on cat. In other words, cat is sitting here, and you could restrict C lower shriek to cat. And you may wonder, is it the same thing as C star? Okay. So, I have not... Okay, theorem. C lower shriek of A is C star of A when A is... is a category. This theorem is assumed in the literature. I have not been able to find a proof, and people seem to think this is obvious. I don't know. I would like to see why it's obvious. It took me 20 pages to prove that. And it's not obvious to me. So I like to prove things. I think in mathematics we should give complete proof. Otherwise, this is our job, right? When we make a statement that something is true, we should give a proof. Okay. I'm maybe a bit reacting to some papers that I'm reading sometime. Okay. So this is very nice to know, because what? I should say thought rather than what. Has a notion of homotopy coherent diagram. And what is a number to be coherent diagram? If you have X simple cell category, and a category, then there is a notion of a diagram in X with codomain A, but which is not strict but homotopy coherent. And let me write like this. It's a notion of an homotopy coherent diagram with domain A with value in X, right? And what this is, it is defined to be a simple cell functor from C star A to X. So you resolve A and you take a simple cell functor from C star A to X. So this is the notions of homotopy coherent diagram, I believe, introduced by Vogt. Am I right about this? Okay. Okay. And now let's play a little bit like this. An homotopy coherent diagram in a sense of Vogt is that. Now, we know that this is that. I'm sorry? Yeah, it is a colimit of simplices, but it is a colimit of simplices in simplices set. In other words, I agree, it's exactly this question, that A is a colimit of simplices. We know that any category is a colimit of simplices, but the colimit, you have to choose it so that this colimit is actually in simplices set. Yeah, right. Because a nerve functor does not preserve colimit in general, right? The nerve functor is a right adjoint, does not preserve colimit. Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, it seems that there is. I don't want to make such a big thing with this result, but I had to. I don't know. Maybe you have a simple proof. But I could not find one. But maybe you have one. I would like to know. Yes. So. Okay. Now, using that, we see that an homotopy coherent diagram is the same thing as something like this, right? Because C star and A4 category. And now by adjointness, we see that an homotopy coherent diagram is something like this. So it's just an ordinary map of simplices set from the nerve of A to the coherent nerve of X. Okay? So that's the idea of Cordier. This is the coherent nerve, C, was introduced by Cordier. And it's because he understood that the notions of homotopy coherent diagram of Vogt could be understood this way. Okay? Okay. I'm sorry? Maps from? Yes. Any. That's true. Okay, so you mean that there is a more general notion of homotopy coherent diagram, and I may be a little bit yeah, right. Okay, I'm using the original notions of homotopy coherent diagram of Vogt. Yeah. Okay. Okay, now the theorem is that the pair this is, just recall, Well, S cat, as a model structure, this is a theorem of Bergner. I won't make it more precise, and then the theorem is that the pair C lower shriek from Saint-Pichel set to S cat and C upper shriek is a Kuhlin equivalence. Kuhlin equivalence. I could send you I have a paper on this. I could send you a preprint on that. There is the same statement in the notes of Lurie, but I have not been able to read his proof, so I don't know. I think he has a proof, but I don't know. I'm not sure it's really a complete proof. He has some argument according to which this is a Kuhlin equivalence, etc. But I don't know. It could be that this is a real proof. I don't know. Functorial. Well, that's sort of giving a functorial resolution of Saint-Pichel curve. Yeah.
Right. But there are models in which, you know, that's taken into account. That would be a different term resolution of the category.
Yeah.
And if we get the same theorem for that different resolution, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, for example, instead of taking a reflexive graph, you could take just graph without units. And then the nerve is would be like an unreduced nerve. This is something like a reduced nerve because the units are preserved strictly. So there are other possible resolutions, and yeah, I agree. It would be nice to have maybe something more general, a more general theorem involving any kind of maybe very general Saint-Pichel resolutions or categories. Yeah. Okay. Now, this is a very useful result in the category, in the theory of quasi-categories, because it implies that if X is enriched over Kahn, I mean, X, a Saint-Pichel category, is enriched over Kahn. So, when a Saint-Pichel category is enriched over Kahn complexes, then it is a Fabrant object. The Fabrant objects are exactly the Saint-Pichel categories enriched over Kahn complexes. Then, the coherent nerve is a quasi-category. Now, this was proved a long time ago by Cordier and Porter. But this is a very useful thing because that's a source. It's an important source of quasi-category. You have a category enriched over Kahn complexes, and you take its coherent nerve, you get a quasi-category. So typically, Kahn is enriched over Kahn, right? Over Kahn complexes. The category of Kahn complexes is Cartesian closed. So you can take its coherent nerve. And this is what I was denoting at zero, but I think I should denote it at one. Okay. So this is the analog of the category of sets. This is something that will become clear. Another example is you take QCAC is enrich over QCAT because it's Cartesian flows. Now you have the J functor from QCAT that picks the maximal CAN complex into CAN, right? With value in CAN. So this is a right adjoint, the functor J. So you can define an enrichment of QCAT over CAN by using J. So harm CAN of XY. X and Y are two quasi-categories. It's just J of Y to the X. That's producing an enrichment of QCAT over CAN complexes. You can therefore take its coherent nerve. This is what I call right hot 2. Now, what is the analogy here? Is, let me draw. Two columns. Okay, here you have sets, CAT, 2CAT. I won't call this a periodic table. Okay, on the category you have hot 1. 1 because it's a 1 category. It's a 1 quasi-category. And hot 2. Because CAT is a 2 category. And 2 CAT is should be a... It is actually a, a 3 category. 2 CAT, remember, is Cartesian flows. So, etc. That's the idea. Okay, I have not defined what is HOT3 at the moment. For the moment, we stop here. Okay, but there is something HOT3, etc. It continue. Okay, so this may be understood as infinity zero categories in the taxonomy of Bazin-Dolan. Okay, infinity zero categories. These are infinity. I mean, this is the category of infinity zero, the quasi-category of infinity zero categories. This is the quasi-category of infinity one categories. This is the quasi-category of infinity two categories. The important thing here is that they are all quasi-categories. Okay. The theory of higher category, from my point of view, is a chapter of the theory of quasi-categories. Okay. There is a quasi-category of two category, and it's a quasi-category. Okay. I'm almost done for today. Okay, so what we have covered until now is really sort of the homotopy theoretic aspect of the theory of quasi-categories, the model structure, some Quillen equivalence with some other things, etc., discussing the fabrication, weak equivalence, etc. Now, from now, or from the next time, I want to describe the extension of category theory to quasi-categories, right? Category theory is based on what? adjoint functors, initial objects, terminal, limits, co-limits, diagrams, things of the sort, right? So we have to do that for quasi-categories. And that will be for Friday. And we start at 9:30 now? Okay. So, good. We can, at 9:30 Friday morning. Thank you.